All right. So this is where the podcast would have cut off.
Yeah.
All right. Vishy, you're going to have a lot of editing to do.
Yeah.
Lord.
Good luck.
Live from our respective summer places. Welcome to the Brown Sports Cosmos Podcast. I'm Samuel Ree, and I am reporting to you live from Little Rock, Arkansas. And with us today is Ethan Jobson. Ethan, tell us where you are.
I'm here in Lake Hill, New York. This is very different than reporting in Providence.
I bet. And also with us is David Cody.
Hi.
David, where are you talking to?
I'm coming from America's birthplace, baby, the South Shore, Massachusetts, near Plymouth, Mass.
Wow. Very nice. And, of course, we have Vishy watching over us, doing the recording for us. So, hey, Vishy.
That great Cleveland.
Unfortunately, TJ has not been able to join us yet. He might come later in the pod, but we're going to proceed, assuming that he's not with us today. But yeah, we just wanted to come at you with a special summer episode because, well, there are a lot of sports things happening, but in particular, there are a lot of NBA things happening. And this has made me very excited. If you pay any attention to my Twitter over the past several weeks, I've been in a state of perpetual shock. But yeah, I think we can into the riff, because there are so many topics, I think that we are going to be sort of focusing on more generalized ideas, generalized topics. So yeah, anyone want to start?
I guess I'll go if no one else will. A lot of things have happened so far this off season, but I think the thing that's most fresh in all of our minds is the Westbrook Chris Paul trade. And I think I wanted to think about how it seems like the Rockets and Thunder are going in very different directions and how they're building the franchise and their goals for their franchise in the near future and who I think is a better path.
Sure thing. David.
All right. I'm wondering, after all this has happened, it sort of seems like the league is more wide open than it's been in a long time, and it's really refreshing after a half decade of Cavs Warriors that we have this kind of this kind of openness in the league. So I'm wondering, after all this dust has settled, it's finally like a question people can have opinions on. Who do you have in the East and who do you have in the West? So I want to talk big picture.
People had opinions where anyone who had the Raptors winning it all this season, they had opinions that were pretty valid. Dude, we're not even talking about the finals yet.
No, that happened.
yeah. The Raptors beat the Warriors. Well, speaking of the Raptors, they had a very special player by the name of Kawhi Leonard. And he made a really league-changing decision, I think. That has affected a lot of the things going on. So I want to talk about the two LAs, LA Clippers and LA Lakers, because the Lakers also made a pretty earth-shattering trade for Anthony Davis. And I think it would be good to sort of talk about where this leaves the league and what sort of implications this has for everything going on. All right.
Let's start with
preferences on where to start.
Let's start with the Russ deal. Let's start with the latest
thing. Oh, yeah.
I think a lot of the talk right now is what are the best and worst moves of the offseason, and I think the for me the OKC Rockets deal pretty much encapsulates that, in that I'm not sure I would say that for me those are the definitely the best or the worst that each team got, but I would say I think the direction OKC is going, I think, is a lot more promising than the directions the Rockets are going. Just because, you know, they're both teams that lost in the conference semifinals who have two big stars. But while the Rockets, it seemed like, decided to instead of having their like toxic team chemistry combination of Paul and Harden, trying to go for the, I guess, supposedly less toxic combination of Westbrook and trading away much of their future to pursue this, the Thunder decided to look up, and now they have a bright future with a lot of different draft picks. Whereas the Rockets, I feel like, have really tried to bet on their near future when there's so many teams that could easily stop them in the West. I mean, there's the two LA teams. The Warriors are still good. You don't want to bet against them. The Jazz are kind of an outside headshot. And then we're not even mentioning the Nuggets and Blazers, who are two of the better teams in the West last year. It's not like they've gone away. So I just don't see what the Rockets are doing with this.
So my perspective on this is that it's kind of one of those all-in moves that you hear a lot about, right? And supposedly the trade for Chris Paul was an all-in move for the Rockets a year or two ago. And they came really close to beating the Warriors. Yeah.
About 29 missed threes away.
Yep. I mean, it was a last game situation in the conference finals. And yeah, I mean, even if you want to sort of talk about, hey, what's chemistry going to look like? I mean, compared to Chris Paul and Harden, Westbrook and Harden go way back, honestly. They had those days on the Thunder together, but even before that, they knew each other in high school, played AAU together, I believe. Were they in like a girls club together? I'm not entirely sure, but they do have a lot of history, and they went to the finals together when they were just kids, and now they're older and maybe wiser, unclear at this time. But yeah, I also think that you could look at this as sort of a Hail Mary from Daryl Morey, because what is left to do if you're the Rockets, right? You realistically, you have Harden locked down. He's your franchise guy in theory. We seeing that Russ has been traded now, maybe the title of franchise guy doesn't really hold a lot of weight anymore. But Harden is locked in for the next 3 years, 3 or 4 years, I believe. He just signed that huge extension. This is your opportunity, your window of opportunity. And even if it doesn't take you anywhere, if you don't at least try, I think that there would be a lot of people who would, I guess, criticize them. Because where's Harden? If they're going to go for a rebuild, then they would end up having to trade Harden, right? And where's he going to go in this marketplace? It's sort of like musical chairs is one analogy that I've used. And I think that's accurate. I don't really see where he would end up after all this craziness has happened.
One piece of news that broke right before one of the trades, right before the Paul George trade, right after the Paul George trade, was that there was a deal in the works with the Raptors, between the Raptors and the Thunder, that would have sent Russ and Paul George to Toronto for Pascal and a bunch of picks. And it didn't happen because the Raptors didn't want to give up Pascal. I feel like that is just fascinating, that the Thunder were just dead set on rebuilding this offseason, like, to begin with. And it's a tremendous risk, especially being in a market like Oklahoma City, where you're not going to attract a ton of free agents without someone like Russell Westbrook. Mm-hmm. But that front office really, really trusts themselves to draft well, and for good reason, obviously, because they drafted three MVP caliber players.
Raptors story kind of brings me to a point I wanted to make, which is that I think that team chemistry is kind of being overrated right now. Teams like traded away some of their future to get basically to be in the same place but with team chemistry. And I'd argue that the Raptors idea and not trading away Pascal, which is probably similar, but I just don't see where those franchises are now. I don't think the Raptors are even a top five team in the East anymore. I don't think the Rockets made themselves that much better. Chris Paul and Harden hated each other, but they almost got past the Warriors, if not for Paul getting injured and also a fluky shooting night. I get this impression that everyone is looking at certain scenarios like the Kyrie mess and with the Celtics and kind of making too big an appraisal based on what happened in those situations. There are so many times that superstars have hated each other and been able to still bring a championship win. I'm not saying that team chemistry is nothing, but I think that these teams are treating it as more than as more important than it is.
Yeah, like the Raptors just won a championship with a 1-year rental player who they, they traded for and then got rid of. Like,
and he was, remember, he was supposed to be a toxic locker room presence.
Yeah, he didn't want to be there.
Won, and then everyone has changed their mind. Yeah. I just find it funny how these characters get created. I feel like you're like giving me the stink eye because that was really Celtics faces last year.
All right. We didn't have to go there, but I mean, yeah, I don't know that I would completely agree with that take in the sense that there is an element of, do these people want to win together, right? And there's a certain point past which it's not possible anymore, which I think we did see with the Rockets, but I think there was a point where, like, at the beginning, it was this beautiful thing where they were able to succeed at a really high level and everything was working out, and we had Chris Paul still at his height. And I think the struggles that they've been having are more related to the frustration that came from not being able to win as opposed to, I think that if they had ended up winning the finals that 1 year, this wouldn't have been the issue that it ended up being, right? But yeah. And in general, I do think that chemistry is a really important thing. With the Raptors in particular, it does sound like they found something special with each other. And Kawhi's ultimate decision, which I guess this is going to transition to a little bit anyway, but Kawhi's ultimate decision was more related to him wanting to be in LA and him wanting to like go home and have all of that going for him. And it sounds like, even though people were saying it was coming down to the Lakers and the Raptors, that the Raptors were really, really close. But they won the finals. They won the championship. I was just going to say, like, I think there is, there's a necessity for on-court chemistry, and that, as we saw with the Celtics, having bad off-court chemistry can lead to there being bad on-court chemistry, but that you can also have on-court chemistry without having that off-court chemistry as long as your goals are unified, right? And I think that's kind of what we saw with the Rockets in the first couple of years of their run there, with Chris Paul and James Harden really desperately wanting to get to the finals and win that championship. And I guess it just soured.
Here's my argument the whole Celtics situation, though. As bad as that was, people acted like there was more of a drop-off than there was. The Celtics, when they got to the conference finals, that was a very weak Eastern Conference. And while the Celtics definitely worked for chemistry and Harry was not a great fit there, they did run into a really good team in the Bucks. I kind of think that people, I don't want to throw shade, but I think people acting like Kemba Walker coming there is magically going to fix all those problems are kind of have wishful thinking that are oversimplifying. And in my defense, many of the Boston beat writers were saying not just Kyrie's fault, that the problems with the Celtics were deeper than that. So
no, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. There were some pretty deep problems there with the Celtics. This is what I have to say on the Celtics. I'll give my quick Celtics spiel. There was something that was just not working. And the fact that Al Horford walked away from that team and ended up joining the Sixers, I think really highlights this, that it wasn't just Kyrie Irving's fault that things got the way that it did. At the same time, the Celtics took the first game off of the Bucks decisively and throughout the season had shown flashes of being something special. There's been some reliable reporting indicating that some of the tension has come around Gordon Hayward's integration with the team, and not so much his play, but more so the idea that he's kind of the teacher's pet, right? The idea that he's Brad Stevens' guy from college, and that he's getting opportunities that he wouldn't have gotten just because of this unfair treatment in some senses, which I don't want to believe, because I think Hayward is at his best is something that pulls that team together in a really incredible way. But at the same time, I can see how that might have affected the team's locker room sort of interactions and such. I also think that Terry Rozier is a god-awful shot taker, and I'm very glad that he's gone.
Yeah, first off seasons, I think that Hornets are definitely a contender for that. I don't know what they're doing. Who do you guys think at this point you're looking at as a title contender? Or if you guys want to be really bold, we could just pick our finals matchups now.
Well, can we talk about the East a little bit?
Okay, sorry, I didn't want to rush us.
Ethan. No, can we talk about who's coming out of the East? Because a ton of the attention has been on the West. And it's just right. Like players who have left the East to the West. But let's – because I feel like there are some good squads in the East. I feel like the East isn't as strong as it was last year. But I'm personally right. Looking at the 76ers to come out of the East. My ECF match would probably be Sixers-Bucks at the moment. I know the Bucks. They lost someone, didn't they?
They lost Brogdon.
They lost Brogdon.
They lost yeah. Brogdon. Okay. Okay.
So but,
yeah.
They kept yeah. Open, so they brought on Wes Matthews.
Yeah.
Right. So I think the Bucks are a good bet. I think the Sixers are a decent bet. What we talked about earlier with we've talked about in the past how the Sixers are sort of a high variance team, right? They're only going to go as far as Embiid and Simmons can take them. I think that they have a decent roster right now. Tobias Harris for the Max really indicates that they think these next couple of years are their window of opportunity to make a championship, and they're not really so concerned about what happens after that at this moment in time. We saw that Embiid can be the best player on the court in any given matchup if he is in good health, if he is in good shape, and has the willingness to assert himself like that. And then signing Al Horford takes away one of the people who was best at defending Embiid in the league. So there's a chance that he can be this centerpiece of a championship run, right? The question is, where does Simmons come in that? Is he able to find a role next to Embiid? Because that's going to have to end up being their final their fourth quarter lineup. And the other question is, who's taking the shots in the last couple of minutes? This past season, it was Jimmy Butler doing that. And, well, do they have a guy like that at this point? Tobias Harris isn't exactly Jimmy Butler in those clutch moments. So there are a couple of questions that I have with them.
With the Sixers, I feel this team kind of reminds me of the Bucks from last year in that they seem like a team that can be really good. But the second I feel like they run into a team that knows how to exploit their weaknesses, I'm not sure how they react. It kind of seemed like I think we recorded the last podcast before the Eastern Conference Finals, or before the end of it anyway.
That's correct.
Like, the second the
right,
the Bucks took that punch from the Raptors, it didn't seem like they knew how to react. I think the East, I feel that it's more likely that someone outside of, like, the top, like, three or four teams mm-hmm. could kind of make a run just on, like, if the team is kind of just, like, has a great playoff run where all their role players are playing well, hitting their shots, it feels like I feel that either the Bucks or the Sixers are teams that I think are taken out by that. So I feel like the East is more like something weird could happen where, like, I don't know, the Pacers could come out and
start. Right. I was actually going to talk about the Pacers. Yeah. I think the Pacers had a pretty good offseason. It was one that, like, is a pretty popular pick for ESPN writers and stuff saying, like, oh, everyone's sleeping on the Pacers. But, yeah, I think the Pacers had a pretty good offseason. They lost Bogdanovich, but they added Brogdon, and they added a couple others. I'm not entirely sure who, but I think they are in a good position right now. They are going to try playing Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis together, and they're going to see how that works, which I think is going to be a little interesting, to say the least. But yeah, I think they're in a good position right now to make some – to surprise some people, because if Oladipo is healthy, if Brogdon ends up being this spacer next to Oladipo that they've needed for a bit now, I think that's a team that can make a little bit of a noise and surprise some people in the playoffs.
Yeah. I feel like the Jazz are kind of go along with that, and like a team that I felt like kind of like sneakily got a bit better. But I feel that where the Pacers are in the East, they're in a better position than the Jazz are to, like,
right.
I think just the two LA teams, and then you factor in like the Warriors and like who knows who else. I just see, even if the Jazz overperform, I just don't see as much of a path for them as I would if like the Pacers or all kinds of teams in the East could overperform.
Right.
It's over.
Yeah. No, Siri.
All right, so let's talk West now.
All right.
Because I feel like the NBA Finals will be the Western Conference Finals in a lot of ways, unless a team in the East can surprise some people. And to sort of tie into what you wanted to talk about with LA, I think people are really, really underestimating how good LeBron and Anthony Davis will pair together.
I disagree about this.
All right. I think Anthony Davis is the type of teammate LeBron has just ideally looks for. Sort of a big who can stretch the floor on offense a little bit, who can run the screen and roll really well, and defends is just about as well as anyone in the game. I've heard the Lakers are going to run LeBron James at the one now, primarily, which makes sense.
They have to.
Yeah, they kind of have to. And I think that lineup, what they have, at least from a starting five standpoint, is about as good as any in the league. So I'm really excited to see how they do. Right now, they're my pick to come out of the West.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Sam, but I think I have to agree that the Lakers are probably my title favorite at this point, which is bizarre because is so bad. But they kind of lucked into some, like, decent moves. Beyond, like, LeBron and AD, which I think AD is actually pretty underrated right now. I think Boogie Cousins. Also, Danny Green, like, is definitely not a bad player to have on your team. I do think that a lot of it is dependent on what LeBron we see now. Like, is this LeBron from a couple seasons ago, or is the age going to start to show? You know, with wear and tear, he might and running into some health problems. AD has also had trouble staying healthy. I don't think they're a sure thing, but I think if I had to pick one team that I think is most likely to win it all, I think that's the team I'd have to pick at this point.
All right. Y'all said your piece. Here's my piece. All right. I really disliked the Anthony Davis trade at the time that it happened. There was no one that they were bidding against. There was no reason for the market price for him to be that high. He's an expiring contract who has expressed interest in not being on that team very publicly, that saying that he wanted to go to the team that was actually trading for him. It sounds like the Celtics weren't even putting Tatum on the table, which means that there was really no package that could even come close to what they ended up giving. They gave up every asset that wasn't a second-round pick not named Kyle Kuzma. They ended up paying Kentavious Caldwell-Pope like $20 million for the next 2 years. It was not a good look for them. And I think their bet was that this would result in them ending up being able to sign Kawhi Leonard as well. But I also think that that would have put them in a pretty poor position going forward, because there's now you have three star players who may have lingering injuries from the past couple of seasons that are really hindering their ability to go in the future. And they wouldn't have had a lot of depth because they barely had room for the three max contracts. I mean, like, they weren't even able to make full max cap space. They were able to kind of salvage a little bit more by trading away the rest of the roster that they didn't trade the first time. But it was a really weird situation for them. And this is not just as a noted hater of the Lakers. I think that it was really a poor negotiation on the Lakers' fault, or on the Lakers' part. For them,
I would agree that it was a terrible long-term move, and I think that organization is a disaster. But that, remember, the Cavaliers have been, in my opinion, a terribly run organization for a while too. Sorry, Vichy.
Just saw Vichy nod.
Stop them from getting a championship. I just think, in terms of the best roster.
Okay, but LeBron James is 35 years old, coming off a groin injury that left him out of half of the season now.
He's still LeBron, though.
Is he? I mean, he's going to be coming off of, like, these Space Jam 2 recording sessions with Anthony Davis, and I don't know. And look, I sat through multiple seasons of Avery Bradley being our best shooting guard, and that's just not a good position to be in, especially at this stage in his career. DeMarcus Cousins is not going to be a defensive plus, and I don't even know that he's going to be an offensive plus at this point. Quinn Cook was a good pickup. Troy Daniels was a good pickup. Danny Green was a good pickup. But other than that, like, so they were able to kind of create a decent-looking roster there, but I think they are going to struggle with injury. I think that load management is going to be a big deal for them, which is going to put them in a tough position in the playoffs because their seeding is unlikely to be that high. A lot of people have them taking, like, the conference's number one seed pretty convincingly, but I don't think that's the case. I think that they're going to be in a similar situation to where they were last season, where they are going to struggle with injury, and it's going to show in their final regular season results. And if they end up having to play one of the higher-seeded teams in the first few rounds of the playoffs, like, obviously I don't want to be matched up with playoff LeBron in the first round, but if that's the situation that they're in, it's going to be an uphill battle for them.
Sam,
I don't think that they're equipped. Yeah.
If you don't think who do you say is your favorite?
I don't know. I think the Lakers and Clippers both are in a situation where they may not be equipped to perform all that well in the regular season. I think that the Clippers do have role players and players who are used to playing that full season because they basically have a lot of the same roster that they had over the last season, where they did pretty decently well in the regular season. And if you throw in Kawhi Leonard and Paul George in the mix intermittently, because Paul George is coming off of two shoulder shoulder surgeries, and Kawhi is probably still hurt a little bit, that they will end up performing decently well, I think, probably better than the Lakers in the regular season. I would have that Clippers team beating this Lakers team if they met up in the playoffs. I think that I really like this Jazz team, but I think that if they were matched up with the Lakers, they would end up losing. I don't know that they have someone who can guard LeBron James, especially playoff LeBron, as someone who's like, all right, I just have to win four games and I can rest for the next week. Because, yeah, I think that, like, you are going to see a different LeBron in the playoffs, but, like, is that going to be enough at this stage in his career? Is that going to be enough considering that if he's taking the whole regular season off or even, like, 30% of the regular season off, they're going to end up being, like, a 5 or 6 seed or something like that. And I don't know. I also think that the Jazz don't really have a lot of good, like, wing defenders. They have some pretty good defenders,
right.
Perimeter defenders in Mitchell and Conley right now, but like I don't know that they would be able to stop Kawhi or Paul George or LeBron or even give them much trouble. They're good like with their point guards and their center, and that's about it. the in between's a little bit iffy right now, and I don't know that they have like a shot taker in the last few minutes. I don't think that Donovan Mitchell is that guy yet. And they'll have, like, a really beautiful game going on with Conley. I think Conley was a great pickup for them. Joe Ingles and Bogdanovich is going to make teams pay from the three-point line. But I think the Jazz might underperform in the playoffs, and the Lakers might overachieve based on what their regular season record is going to be. But I would still have the Clippers over the Lakers right now.
The only thing I see that would give the Clippers the edge over the Lakers in a matchup for what I'm looking at right now would be the fact that they have sort of a semi-third player in Montrezl Harrell at center, who's sort of just this good, established, like, second-fiddle good player who's used to playing that type of game and can play alongside guys. He played alongside James Harden at Houston, didn't he? But he... Yeah, I like him, and I like the Clippers specifically because I love me a good 6'8 center also. I love me a good small center.
So are both of you for
I think, yeah.
I am for the Lakers, but I like Montrezl Harrell is what I'm saying.
Right.
I want to throw an idea.
The Anthony Davis – right. No, I was just going to say, like, I think the Anthony Davis factor – is going to be a problem in the Clippers matchup against the Lakers if he is performing to his ability and they're able to find something that, like, I don't think they have the size to deal with him at this moment. Trez is kind of a undersized big man right now, but it does sound like they are in the market for making a couple of moves for sounds like they're in the market for making a couple moves for some bigger guys. So if they're able to find something to deal with him, like, I think that's you take those.
An idea I want to throw out is we'll talk briefly about the New Orleans Pelicans. I could see them maybe sneaking into the playoffs with the roster they have right now. It's going to take a lot. It's going to take some time for them to gel together, given just the volume of new players they've added. But I don't know. I just like the lineup they have right now. I like Lonzo and Drew on the court. Obviously, I love Zion. Brandon Ingram would be a good compliment to Zion. Yeah, what do you guys think?
J.J. Redick's a good pickup as well.
Yeah.
It's very dependent on how quickly Zion can adjust to the NBA or whether he's the kind of player we think he is. But I would say that in this league where the Pelicans could make some noise more so than a rebuilding team usually could.
Yeah. I think they did a great job building personnel-wise around Zion. Like, they have Drew and Lonzo who can pass to Zion. Mm-hmm. They have Brandon Ingram and J.J. Redick who can shoot around Zion. And then the middle is empty mm-hmm. for Zion to play. I think they're really, really setting up to have Zion succeed here in his rookie year. And then it's a young core that they can move forward with.
Definitely.
The Pelicans are in such an exciting position right now, and I think that they're going to be really good going forward. I think the Mavs could be really good going forward, but I don't know that this is going to be the year, given the amounts of, like, good teams that there are in the West right now. Yeah. And, like, if you're going to put either one of them in the playoffs, you'd almost have to take out, like, either the Spurs, who I think are going to be like playoff ready this time around with some of their young guys that were hurt last year coming back, and maybe like even one of these LA teams, if they really struggle in the regular season, might struggle to get into the playoffs. We saw that last year as well, where like having the talent, if you're not able to maintain it over the full 82 games, it can give you some trouble getting into this pretty loaded West. You can make cases for honestly like 11 or 12 teams making the playoffs, and like, who do you take out? There can only be eight. I want to talk briefly about three teams really quick. So first off, my favorite player, Nikola Jokic, he's on the Nuggets. I think that they're gonna be a good regular season team. They just signed Jamal Murray to this max extension. I think there will be a really good regular season team. I have some doubts about their playoff aptitude unless they end up matched up against a team that doesn't really match up well against them. They don't really have people who can deal with wings in a very similar way to the Jazz. Jokic would get feasted on by Anthony Davis, I think. Even though I consider him a smart and sturdy defender, I don't really consider him like a very talented defender. I think we'll see some of the same things that we saw this season, unless there are some of the guys on that team who make a leap. Maybe Will Barton, this is his year that he really shows up. Maybe this is Jamal Murray's year that he decides to make the leap into being like an all-star level point guard. I think Jokic is already there, but it's tough to have a guy who plays like him be your number one guy. Any thoughts on that?
I feel bad for teams like the Nuggets and the Jazz at this point, who have sort of just been building good, solid teams that would win the East right now. Just to have these super teams and these super pairings flood into the West. I do like them, and right. I think because of their depth, they might make some real noise in the playoffs. I like them better than a team like the Rockets. But I don't know how high they'll go.
So I want to talk about the Blazers really quick. I think that they had a pretty good offseason. They really buffed up with their bigs. They signed Scott Labissiere, or I think they traded for him last season. And Nurkic is probably not going to be hurt, maybe. Anthony Tolliver is there now, and they traded for Hassan Whiteside, who I'm not super high on most of the time, but I think has the ability to at least be a body they can put on the court every now and then. Zach Collins is going to improve again. They signed Mario Hezonja, the man himself. I think the Blazers, I like – oh, and they also they either signed or they traded for Kent Bazemore, who is a pretty good three guy, a little bit undersized for a shooting guard at 6'5", but gives them a little bit more of that shooting around Dame and CJ that they would like. So I think they're in a good position with how up in the air the West is right now, because it's hard to say like, oh, you can say like Anthony Davis and LeBron James should win the West, but there's a lot of questions with all of the teams right now. And the Blazers have put themselves in a position, I think, where they could possibly be one of the teams to take advantage of those questions.
All right. So I don't have a hot take to give or anything?
I want to talk a little bit. I would like to talk about another sport other than basketball, but the only other sport I know about is football, and nothing is happening. So I'm going to stick to basketball, and I want to talk a little bit about a narrative that's kind of getting lost right now is the Golden State Warriors. And I love the idea of sort of the rise and fall of dynasties over the course of history, and I think we may have just seen the instantaneous collapse of one of the best teams of the 21st century. Not necessarily a collapse in that they're not going to be good. They are, but they don't have much of the firepower they had for the past couple seasons. Obviously, they don't have Kevin Durant. Klay Thompson's coming off injuries, so for a while, it's just going to look like Steph, Draymond, and whatever D'Angelo Russell is going to be doing. Another signing to me, the D'Angelo Russell signing, looked like a weird sort of desperation, like let me just get someone type of deal. I'm really, really fascinated.
It kind of sounds like they're planning on trading him too.
Yeah, I haven't heard any of that, but that wouldn't shock me. I'm really fascinated to see what they're going to try to do now. It's really hard for teams in any sport mm-hmm. to sort of manage themselves in this position where they feel that they're at the tail end of their dynasty run. And they have to make the decision, do we keep trying and keep kicking, or do we just go into rebuild mode? So this year and the years going forward, it's going to be really interesting to see what Golden State tries to do.
Okay. I just wanted to say my piece before my laptop runs out of charge. So well, the NBA has been, a lot of stuff has been happening there. There also was recently something called the Women's World Cup.
What is that?
And so the United States women's team won, which I hate. I think it's so every US women's team wins a thing, and we have to wait 4 years for something interesting to happen. And the thing that I want to go on a rant on is about the English women's team. I think you can make a good argument that they have the second most talented team on in the world in the women's game. They have Lucy Bronze. They have a lot of talent on their roster. And yet they're wasting it with Phil Neville, a manager who had very little managerial experience before he took over that team. And they have so many better options to be the manager of that squad. Kelly Chambers, she's a manager of Reading in the Women's English League. That team she's done wonders with. It was a team that was early on just lucky to make the top flight of women's football, and now they're up with the like top teams like Arsenal, Chelsea women's, which with a lot less talent. I think she'd be a great choice for the national team post. I think Emma Hayes, Mark Skinner would also be great choices. English Football Association, wake up. Phil Neville is not the answer. I need you to start doing well because I can't the same boring team winning every year. That's just my feeling.
All right. So, David, I heard that your brother is coming to Brown pretty soon, right?
Yes, sir.
And he is a strong Knicks fan, one that I've had a couple conversations with now. One goes out to John.
Don't know how that happened, but it's not my fault.
This one goes out to John Cody. I think the Knicks have a decent organization now. This is a really weird take. Oh, yeah. I think that here's the thing. The reason the Knicks are in such a bad position, I think, is a combination of their fan base having unrealistically high expectations and James Dolan condoning those unrealistically high expectations. They have not been a well-run organization for the better part of a decade. They traded away their franchise player in Kristaps Porzingis. And yes, you can say, oh, he requested a trade, good riddance and all of that. But why did he request a trade? Because you guys were in a really bad position. And I think that the ownership was treating him really badly. I think it was very similar to the Kawhi Leonard situation where he didn't trust the medical staff there either. And he was the first glimmer of hope the Knicks had in since Melo came there, basically. And they just did him dirty like that. Fine for me. I love Luka, and I love seeing him on the Mavericks. I'm looking forward to that season. But, yeah, I think anyone who was saying, yeah, we're getting Zion, KD, and Kyrie was fooling themselves. But right now you're in a position where I think you have to trade Frank Ntilikina for something because I don't see his offensive game panning out. But other than that, RJ Barrett might be a bad shot taker, but I like his fire. I think that he's a good prospect, at least. I think he really loves the game of basketball. They didn't make really dumb signings as soon as they struck out. They made like short-term deals that did fill up their cap space, but I think like there are a couple of younger guys there that you do want to take some flyers on. Julius Randle has shown some pretty good stuff Taj Gibson's a good locker room presence, and that's been proven over time. And Bobby Portis is from Arkansas, so represent me. yeah, Steve Mills is a good GM, and all of these moves would be considered great if they hadn't spent the past 5 months being like, oh yeah, we're getting Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. That was never going to happen, okay? Yeah, I think if there were any other organization who didn't have the expectations of getting KD and Kyrie, we'd be saying like, all right, they're making some pretty good moves. So, Knicks fans, I would say tone down your expectations and you guys will be all right.
Yeah, I kind of purposely didn't talk about the Knicks because I think they're irrelevant right now and they get
yeah.
But
they're trying so hard to they want so badly to be relevant, but it's okay to be irrelevant sometimes. I mean, the Hawks did that for years and now they're in a position where they have drafted really well. A lot of assets, and the Nets were pretty irrelevant for a couple of years there, and now they have Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. You have to prove that you're a good organization first by being a good organization before you can even start thinking about any of this other stuff.
I think they did pretty well. Most of their contracts were decent. I'd say the Taj Gibson and like Wayne Ellington ones, that I don't really understand why you do that rather than like keep some flexibility with your cap and be able to take on some bad contracts that might get you like some picks. But I think they have like a solid beat like,
yeah.
offseason.
Right. And it's like with the way the trades are constructed now, you do need to have some guys who are movable contracts, guys that you can trade for those max guys if they end up becoming available. And now they have like three or four of them. So I think they're in a good position. They have some assets, they have some trade moves that they're able to make. If they don't trade for Chris Paul, I think they're in good hands with Steve Mills for the next
trade for Chris Paul.
There's a lot of talk about them trading for Chris Paul, which makes me really worried about this take.
All right, so on that optimistic note, thank you for listening.
Yeah, thank you guys for listening. Thank you all for being here. It's great to see you all again. I hope your summers start going well. Yeah, go for it.
There was also another thing that happened, which was the MLB All-Star break. I just wanted to I think the MLB, I mean, it's kind of emblematic that we barely talk about that on this podcast because the league is kind of losing America's youth, and now they're trying kind of a lot of, like, weird things to, like, bring people back. Mm-hmm. Like, there's this whole controversy about juicing balls, which it's pretty clear from, like, per se that it's happening. You get more home runs. I think that's a really dumb attempt. But the home run derby, which is always my favorite part of the All-Star break in baseball, actually showed the path to viability for baseball. I thought Vlad Jr. and Acuna looked very exciting. I think they're the young stars of the future. And I'm just really happy that we could see them and we could get some more personalities that are going to get people interested in baseball again. That's all I want to say.
I'll make this plug right here. If you guys are interested in baseball at all, you should look up the Korean Baseball League. They're really good over there. And if you ever get the chance to go to one of their games, I would highly recommend it. It is one of the most hyped atmospheres I've ever been at for a game of baseball. I think that that's like a lot more exciting than any MLB thing that I've ever heard about over 15 years. So,
shameless self plug. I might have baseball content coming out on the Sports Convos website soon. So, it's Sports Convos, right?
Yes, sportsconvos.com.
Just keep your...
Our Twitter is... Yeah.
Yeah, just keep your eyes peeled and ears peeled for that. So, sorry.
Guys, yeah. This is a really clean outro we're doing.
Yeah, I'm working on one. I'm working on an article about the NBA's new duos because we have a lot of paired superstars now. I'll wait until the dust has settled a little bit more, but that's also something to keep an eye out for. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, our website is sportsconvos.com. Our Twitter is @BRNSportsConvos. That's @BRNSportsConvos. Thank you all so much for listening. Thank you guys so much for podcasting with us. And I will see you guys at some indeterminate point in the future.
Have a great summer, guys.
Yeah, you too. Long-awaited championship, and I think that they're okay with whatever. Right?
Is the audio okay for everyone else? Sorry.
No.
Okay. Yeah, Sam, could you just run that back?
I really want to hear what he's saying, but I can't.
Oh, no.
Should we? Say something.
All right. Well, looks like we're having some technical difficulties right now.
It's inevitable.
Yeah. It's the tough part about recording through video chat.
Yeah.
Still the Brown Sports Compost podcast. We're still here.
We're down. There's down to two of you. Have you ever seen? Have you ever seen Unfriended? That like horror movie about a video chat where like one of them dies every couple whatever. That's what this feels like to me.
I see where you're going with that.
So I think you were about to talk about LA, right? And that sort of new emergence of basketball in LA in terms of like now we have two potential superpowers in that city.
And this can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Great. Welcome back. Okay, great. Yeah.
Say something smart that you were saying before.